South by Southwest. Old friends, new friends, stupid idiots wearing green with crazy projects. And for once, that's not me. It's you, yes. Hello, Phil.
Hello, how are you, Ian?
I'm doing very well. I get to be the sensible one in this interview. Phil Campbell joining me now, and current project is called what?
Fibre Camp.
So basically, this is what, four a day, make sure that you have regular motions?
It's pretty much, yeah. I got to the conclusion that I should like be streaming to the world all the problems that I have with my bowels, and so therefore I decided to build a studio around that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that business plan failed.
Yes. So I moved on rapidly. I had to scale up very quickly and change that business model. What we've developed is a community-based web TV streaming studio in a 17th century building with a 21st century internet connection. So we've got 100 megabit fiber. And basically what it is, we have a non-for-profits, one-person bands, and people who want to get content on the web. So the biggest problem is that you have the low end of the scale with people with flip cameras. You have the top end of the scale, which is people with high-end studios, but nobody is servicing the web industry. You go to a web designer and you say, I want video on my website, he has to outsource it somewhere else. So ever since the volcano happened, whose name I can't pronounce, it's not like a prince thing.
Erskine.
There you go. That place there that Ewan just told me about.
Strangely enough, it's actually an anagram of Big Volcano in Iceland.
Right.
Seriously, Big Volcano in Iceland, and that's how you remember it.
Okay. Well, mental note, scarred for life, probably. Because of that happening, I noticed that a lot of people who do video programming were going back to their hotel rooms and doing their weekly video on Skype. So obviously the quality was rubbish. So I thought to myself, wouldn't it be awesome if you could have, within 10 minutes of a train station in the UK, a fiber studio, a studio that you could literally drop in like a coffee shop and record your content.
So you've got one pilot study running now in the UK, yep?
Correct, yeah. So we have a 17th century building in the Lace Market area of Nottingham. And that place is originally a 6-month trial. In the basement of the building, which was totally unused, I approached the guy who runs the building, who rents out properties to other businesses, and said, can we use the space? And he said, what are you going to do with it? I said, well, you know, it's perfectly, the ambient temperature down there is perfect. There's no noise down there. It's perfect for a studio. So literally, organically, from scratch, I put my own hardware in there, which I bought over the last 2 or 3 years, and asked for various hardware manufacturers, Logitech, Bamuser, Wistia, a whole bunch of people whose services are already used and have been using for the last 4 years. I said, look, I'm building this community studio. I don't have a budget, and even if I didn't have a budget, I'm not going to go the usual route of taking £40,000-£50,000 from a bank for a studio, because most studios are sitting empty most of the time. I wanted to build a studio where people can drop in and use it like a coffee shop, so like a coffee shop for media. In the same way that you go into a coffee shop and say, I want that kind of coffee with this kind of thing to it, I wanted people to schedule the time, turn up, record their content. By the time they leave, it's already on the web.
So how long has that pilot been running now?
6 months.
So this is the end of your 6 months and you're going on? What happens now?
Right. So at the end of the 6 months, we had a sit down with the guy, Nick Max, from CHC Land, and said, we got to the point now where we're actually putting together a package for people. So we have two firm retainers now, which actually pay for the space. But what's actually happened from it over the last 6 months, which has been really interesting, which we never really thought would happen, is that the guy who runs the building has ended up filling the whole of the building just because I'm in that space. Because I'm tweeting about the Lace Market House, I'm in the studio in the basement of the Lace Market House, this consistent sort of updating that social media does. And because of it, he has filled the building and has another building on the go somewhere else in Nottingham. So, you know, it's quite interesting because now they're sort of, we're cross-pollinating different projects. He wants me to work on some of the stuff that he's doing in the building. So we have a TV set up in reception now, showing all the streams that are coming out of the basement. So you get a lot of people sitting in reception, waiting for clients in the rest of the building who are now watching the content from Fibre Camp. So, yeah, we've now got a couple of clients where we can make it carry on for the next 6 months.
So essentially what you've done is you've got the model, you've proven it, you've importantly not lost money.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the problems with randomly starting stuff up and letting it fail, I believe in rapidly, iteratively trying something, fail fast. You know, literally, if it's not going to work, fail fast, move on to something else. I knew this would work because people want to use video, but they don't necessarily know how to use the tools, the software, the hardware. And the fact that I've already built up a network over the last 4 years, it just makes sense to use my reach in terms of a community studio, ultimately leading up to hyperlocal community TV. That's what I want to do for an area of Nottingham.
Okay. And of course, those people who are following the UK know that local TV is one of these things that they're trying to push through.
Sure.
And they're looking for usability. So it's kind of taking over. And it's weird because when you come over to America, you've got local TV, you've got PBS. You've kind of had that ethos here from the 70s, whereas in the UK it was, you know, we love the BBC, but BBC local is such a great inhibitor.
Yes. I think one of the problems with local access TV is that a lot of people don't watch it because the programming often is a little bit disjointed. You know, it doesn't have that polished finesse. I think the reason why I wanted to do Fibercamp in the way that I did is that the story about how we got started is important. And the reason for that is there's 68,000 students in Nottingham. And a lot of them go on to the BA multimedia courses. They come out of these courses after 3 years with lots of individual skills on the applications and software. But they don't really have the balls to actually go and make stuff. You know, they don't go and make content. They don't do the next step. So the community TV, from my perspective, was using what I've known over the last 4 or 5 years with social media, is that if you put this stuff out there, get people communicating back to you, is it good or is it bad? You can iterate quickly. I think community TV, the problem with it is it stays stale for a long time. I think the fact that we can get people in, record it, publish it, live to the web, we use BAM users to stream in HD straight out to the web. There's no messing around with pre-production or editing or anything like that. It's done. You know, I think a lot of these places get their expenses is spent on that stuff, and whereas I think really the raw conversation is what makes it work.
So this could be an interesting question. How many minutes of streaming have been done? I mean, can you quantify what has that 6 months actually delivered?
Yeah, absolutely. We use a very specialist service called Wistia. Now, the thing about Wistia is it's an enterprise-class video host, so it has heat maps and analytical tracking to the video. So you can literally watch the statistics and the coming back of when people turn off, which is hugely valuable to any of the clients who want to use the space, because they can say, am I waffling on? Where was the important bit? When do people rewind and go over it just to make sure they heard what they heard? So what we've got is a real fabulous breakdown as to how many hours people are listening to a certain segment. Everybody bangs on about return on investment and social capital, but actually being able to give them to a client and say, people have watched it for this amount of time and they liked this bit but they hated this bit, it means we can iterate the show quickly. So instead of them paying us a bunch of money for a series which might have 6 episodes, they can get to episode 2, look at their stats and go, actually, we need to change the format completely. Instead of just doing something for 6 months, it's a waste of time.
And all I would say to that principle is Outcasts.
Outcasts? Please elaborate on the Outcast.
No. Everybody can go look in Wikipedia. That's a TV series. And really, when they got to episode 2, iteration would have been nice. Phil, what happens now? I mean, do you look to expand it yourself out of Nottingham? Do you stick it in a franchise model?
Yeah.
Do you open source the principle, as it were?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. I think you just touched on both of them. One, I would like to franchise it across the country. I'd like to have 4 or 5 of these. Manchester, Leeds, Bristol, all over the place.
All in England.
All in it. Well, you know, if we...
You're caught now, aren't you?
In fact, I'm trying to retreat up my own backside. No,
you iterated away from that plan at the start.
Scotland would be good too, of course. No, I've got it in my mind about 4 or 5 different spaces. I am sort of talking to investors. I haven't got to the point yet where I've quantified the business plan, because obviously they need to see a proper business plan. It's a little bit airy-fairy there. So I'm talking to people who are in business, who are doing business, so they can teach me. I think a lot of people are still looking in, seeing what it's about. They're very interested in it. But yeah, absolutely, I'd love to have a franchise model, 4 or 5 places. And then also open sourcing the process. I think you've touched on something really important there, is that these students that are coming out of college, people can do what I'm doing. I'm not looking to have a competitive advantage over anybody. You know, I'm trying to get people away from this idea that you need 50 grand or 60 grand to open a studio. You can do this stuff with a good network, with good support, with good hardware people that you use daily. You just need to do it in the right way. So yeah, 2 things: open source it and franchise, definitely.
Phil, where can people find out more information, both locally to get into there in Nottingham, and for everybody else listening to the podcast to go, ooh, that's an idea?
Yeah, sure. So if you go to fiberca.mp, so it's Fibercamp, fiberca.mp. You can also follow my blog on blog.me.dm, and also I'm on Twitter at Phil Campbell.
Phil, great to see you again.
Thank you very much, Ewan.
There are some interviews at South by Southwest where I know it's going to be nice and serious,
and we're going to really explore a subject. There are others which I think are going to derail instantly the second I introduce the guests. This is the latter. So we have
Edgar Wright,
Nick Frost,
Joe Cornish. Yeah, we're here to talk about Attack the Block, which is my dictatorial which is my dictatorial debut. Now, my
I refer the honourable listeners to the quote I gave some moments ago about derailing interviews.
And it stars Sir Nicholas Frost.
Good morning.
And it was executive produced by Professor Edgar Wright.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, welcome to the Open University.
Lovely. Again, another cultural reference that the Americans just probably won't get.
Google it.
Yeah, there we go, Google it. Attack the Block. Tell us about it, Joe.
Attack the Block is a film about a gang of teenage kids who protect their tower block from an alien invasion. It's a fusion of a gang movie, a little like The Warriors or Rumblefish or The Outsiders, with a kind of 80s monster movie.
Yeah. Favorite 80s monster movie?
Oh, I couldn't tell you my favorite. That would be like...
Okay, Nick's favorite.
Nick's favorite monster movie? Probably Tremors, I don't know. Tremors?
He's right.
I think Tremors might be 1990.
Okay.
Google it.
Just Google it. It's out there.
Count as late 80s?
I guess it does. If you believe that the decade starts in 1991, then
yeah,
it is on the cusp.
Favorite 80s... probably Predator.
You had a lot of stalling time to think there, though. Congratulations, Joe. Right, Nick, tell us about your character without using the letter J.
Well, I wanted to say it straight away, but I couldn't think of a... Anyway, I play Ron, who is a drug dealer.
Edgar, what do you do?
What do I do?
I mean, you're exec producer in this one.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're known for directing beforehand. Did Joe come to your advice, or were you just at the back going, no, don't do it like that, oh dear?
I think my part in it came mostly before and after the shoot. Like, during the shoot, I was in the midst of Scott Pilgrim, but I would like to think that I gave, even though Joe is slightly older than me, I'd like to think that I gave him fatherly advice, slightly patronizing and condescending. But we'd been working together before and writing together, and this film was made under the same kind of production company as Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and Paul and Scott Pilgrim. So
you often carry Joe around in a big baby Bjorn on set.
Yeah, that's right. But I think sort of, I'm obviously like not just one of Joe's one of my best friends, but I'm a huge fan of his, and so it was exciting to me to kind of help him in some way with his first movie and try and impart some advice on I'd done a first movie once. I did a first movie before my second movie, so I thought maybe I could tell him some advice about my first movie.
Joe, was it helpful to have it there or not?
It was very helpful.
Hold on a second. Edgar, look, over there in the other room. What was he really like?
No, he was really good. He was pretty busy with Scott Pilgrim, but, while we were actually shooting. But no, there's nothing like having somebody, a friend who's actually done it before. So it was great, and it's great to have him here now. It's just a good stamp of approval. And if I can, capitalize on Edgar's reputation to boost my own efforts, then excellent.
Yeah, that's good because, originally Edgar wasn't coming into this interview. And I turned up there and said, oh, we're going to put Edgar in as well. It's why?
I'm just a big fan of kilts.
Audio podcast, just imagine. Nick. I interviewed you many years ago when you said things that we won't repeat for various legal reasons. But at that time, you just come off Space, and it's like this, at that point it was the first acting job for Shaun of the Dead, I think, in a feature film.
What, Shaun of the Dead was my... My first film. Yeah.
Have you matured as an actor, given that you haven't gone through the whole ride and proper training and everything, you just kind of fell into the job?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's for me to... I think you'd have to ask Joe and Edgar, really.
Who would you prefer me to ask?
Maybe Joe, actually.
Okay, Joe.
I didn't hear the question because the food's arriving. It smells so lovely.
How have I matured as an actor, Joe?
How's he matured as an actor? I can't possibly answer that question. I'd never directed Nick before, so...
Oh, right, so we do have to...
Where it takes 10,000 hours to be perfect at anything. And I've been acting now for 10 years, so I think I've done an apprenticeship, I've kind of spent a lot of time just watching other actors, watching Bill Nye. if you want to know how to act, watch Bill Nye.
Edgar, has he improved?
Yeah, I think sort of...
you don't have to answer that.
Of course. What kind of question is that? I'm not going to say no.
Oh, come on, say no.
I was always pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, anything to get out of that restaurant you were working in.
Yeah, I quite liked it, though.
Right, so, the film itself, Ed South by. We're running out of time. Do it in 30 seconds, like just a minute.
Do what?
Tell us about the film and when it's on and why people should go and see it.
Oh, it's on at midnight tonight, I believe. There are two other screenings next week. I'm not sure when they are. People should go and see it because it's a fun time. It's a crazy fusion of a kind of realist film and a monster movie. And it's probably unlike anything you've ever seen before.
There you go.
Bang.
Yeah, no repetition, no hesitation, no deviation. Bit of dictatorship at the start. Joe, Nick, Edgar, pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Although South by Southwest Interactive and Film are definitely on the go now, the music is ready to start on Wednesday, and bands from all over America, and indeed all over the world, are flocking down to Austin. But before they do that, they need to do the travel, they need to do all the airplane and everything, and some of them need to be on a phone call to me from Chicago. Joining me now from the Windy City itself, Kyle D. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, how are you?
Doing pretty well. I mean, it's been a hectic couple of days already, and there's another week of fun and games to look forward to. And I finally get to see the start of your band set.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah. Singing, of course, for The Frantic, a band that I stumbled over last year, just walking down 6th Street, one of those moments at South by Southwest where you just go, I like that band. You kept me there for almost 25 minutes, the entire set that you had left over, I have to say.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because, I mean, just the fact that we can network with people from across the world. I mean, at South by Southwest, there's everyone, you know, everyone's down at the same time. It was really cool.
So one of the things that got me, that I mean, there seemed to be that sort of joyful energy that came out of the band, but it wasn't angsty or depth or anything. It just seemed like you all just enjoyed playing fast, hard music.
Yes, we do. Very much.
Simple as that. Yes, that's it. Let's move on. Next question. So what's...
No. I mean, it's just kind of what we grew up listening to. We listened to a lot of punk rock music like Green Day or the Ramones and the Sex Pistols, the Clash. I mean, we all skateboarded when we were in our teen years, and that's the music that we always skateboarded listening to, so it shows in the music that we create.
So what has been the story for the last year then? Obviously, you've got the album Audio and Murder that's been on constant rotation up here in Scotland, for anybody who will listen to it. But what's life been like for yourself and the rest of the guys in the band?
Yes, we spent most of the past year writing and recording new songs in the studio. And now we have a new EP that we're going to release in April. And we're also going to pre-release it at South by Southwest this year as kind of anyone who's there can get it before we actually really release it.
Now, you've got it up there on MySpace as The Frantic self-titled EP. Is that actually the title, or have you just not made your mind up yet?
No, we're just going... It was meant to just be released. We really just wanted to record it for ourselves to hear the songs back as like a demo. So we ended up actually liking them and decided that it would be cool to release to our fans as just a self-titled EP. Nothing, I mean, we're still going to record a full-length CD, so we didn't want to put too much thought into this. Yeah, we just kind of wanted to put the songs out there for the people who wanted to hear them.
Okay, so obviously some of them are going to be debuting at South by Southwest. You've got a good schedule, I see. Three or four gigs are you going to be playing this year?
Yeah, we're going to be playing Wednesday through Sunday. We'll be playing down at South by Southwest.
Right. So you've got all those dates up on your band's website?
Yes, you can check thefrantic.com. For tour dates and new music updates. And we also have facebook.com/wearethefrantic or myspace.com/thefrantic, Twitter @thefrantic, all of the stuff.
So basically covering every single base there, as you have to do nowadays.
Yeah, all the social media.
So we've got one of those tracks from the EP now for our listeners here at the South by Southwest Baby Podcast. Do you want to give us a little introduction to this piece, Kyle?
Yeah, we have a song called Bulletproof. It's the first track on our new EP, and it's a little bit heavier than our last CD, so I hope people don't think we're straying off too much, but it was just one of those angry songs that we needed to write.
You think you broke me, baby, the way your hips swing? You're just a plastic trophy, ain't worth anything. Pretend you got in my head, pretend it's point blank, baby, I'm bulletproof. Why would I waste my time with you when I know the things you do? Take your shot, hit me point blank, baby, I'm bulletproof. You think you broke me?